Okay, you were saying you're talking about the displaced Abel Mason.
Abel Mason and cows.
Uh-huh.
And one way, the earliest way to determine this was to listen on that side, and if the Abel Mason slipped down under the rumen and came up there, the top of it would be filled with gas. And the way that they listened in there, and you could hear like somebody dropped a pebble in a rain barrel and go, tum!
Mm-hmm.
And because of the gas, and then you could thump on the side where this displaced Abel Mason was, and you'd get a boing, 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 boing noise like that. So they brought this to a veterinary meeting in St. Charles, Illinois, and Michigan had done a lot of work with this, trying to diagnose the condition and the way to diagnose it. This is a condition that's just happened within the last 15 years. So they'd done a lot of experimenting.
Due to the change in feeding.
Due to the change in feeding, yes. And they'd done a lot of experimenting, try to get this thing easy for the veterinarians to diagnose. So they made a tape, made quite a few tapes on this, and they sent this tape down to our meeting so that we could play it.
Mm-hmm.
So some guy set the tape up and wiped the whole thing out.
So you couldn't hear all those ping pings
no,
and what it sounded
gone.
Like.
The guy messed with the tape and he didn't know what he was doing. He put it in the taper, and I guess as he put it on, he had it on tape, and he just taped something, the meeting noise, right over the top of the tape that was on there, and it was all wiped out.
Well, that happens every now and then.
So, they were really upset in Michigan because they'd worked so hard to get all these sounds, and now it's a real common thing. I haven't gotten involved in surgery yet. It's, you can get involved in too many things, and you can't specialize in two Burman horses and treating horses and breeding horses and doing rectals and trying to find their ovaries and treating cows and get involved in cow surgery and then the dog thing. You kind of got to specialize a little bit, and I think that that's what this has come to. So then I leave the surgery to the guys that are doing it all the time, because I'd probably go out and mess them up unless I really worked at it. Now, you don't have, when you're busy every day, you don't have time to go out and work these things up to be able to be professional at it. You can't be a professional at everything. There's just no way you can. You got to decide what you want to do, and then make up your mind and do that. So I kind of like the horse part, and so I've kind of pushed more for that.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said this morning, that's kind of seasonal, and it's going to be a while. These foals are beginning to be born now, and I'm going to begin to get busy. But in the month of January, there was just nothing going on. And then, of course, we had all the snow, so
there wasn't
nobody
much you could
do
doing
anything in the country except the emergencies and the sick cows and things like that. And there really weren't a lot of those, so there wasn't a whole lot to do. But I'm beginning to be a lot busier now. I don't know. In a way, I'd sooner that I had a type of practice where you could have some time that you could get off and have a little slack time so you could do.
Mm-hmm.
Me a thing, because for many years I worked 7 days a week, and that kind of gets under your hide after a while.
Yeah, you need to take a trip and take a little time off.
You're so glad to get back from a trip that isn't funny, too.
Right. Tell me, check and be sure to spend time. Here's a story on the afterbirth.
Real bad snowy night. And this farmer's wife was about to give birth, and he called the doctor and told him that his wife was in labor and wanted to know what to do. And the doctor says, well, I can't come out there and you can't get in because there's so much snow and everything. But he says, you know, it's just like with a calf. She'll have the baby and you tie off the umbilicus and everything. And if you have any problems, why call me? So everything went along fine. And so he didn't call the doctor or anything, so a couple days later the doctor called up and said, say, he said, how did everything come along? He said, just fine. He said, a 7-pound baby boy and everything was just fine. But he said, you know, he says, I had a hell of a time getting my wife to eat that placenta.
That's a good one.
That probably better not be put in the book, but that the cows ate the placenta. I mean, this is what they tell you in the story and say, that if the cow ate that placenta, then it was out of the way and the wolves wouldn't find that, because if the wolves find it, then they know that there's a calf around someplace and then they'd go looking. But if the cow turned around and cleaned up after herself, well, there's nothing there that they can detect the presence of a new calf. And that was the way the wolves kind of, and of course originally that's the cattle were run wild, and the buffaloes and everything, and they all do this. Now, this can cause all kinds of complications, too, because it can get caught in the combination of these stomachs and plug things up and plug them up, too, inside. So, really, from a standpoint, it isn't a good thing to have them eat it, even though you might think there's good things in it, because it can cause complications as far as the digestive tract is concerned.
Because they're not used to having that sort of...
Right, that sort of thing, and then it's,
that's carnivorous,
it's quite, you see, yeah, well, not only that, but you see it's quite big, and it's quite extensive, and if it got in and it wasn't the type of food that they ate, if they chew it all up in little pieces, that'd be different, but
they sort of slop her down. Yeah.
So, I suppose if it went down in the rumen and rotted, why then... it might deteriorate enough. So, but it isn't the type of food that they eat, and their system really isn't set up for the type of thing. So, it
so if you're around, you take it away rather than let them eat it.
Take it away.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I might put something like that. Perhaps this is before the chapter that you read that I read you about Doc Nylund's. Perhaps your afterbirth will not all come out, for the placenta is buttoned to the uterus lining, and sometimes the labor action is not enough to loosen it. Then in a day or so, Daddy or Grandpa will reach down your vagina to your uterus and unbutton the placenta and draw it carefully out. In a very hard case, the vet will come, but usually the placenta comes out naturally. Your calf is on its feet now and sucking. You lead your calf to a far corner of the pasture and hide it in a clump of bushes, but the hired man finds you and takes you both to the barn. You nurse your calf for a few days.
8 months.
Here's cow diseases. Okay.
They vaccinate him for brucellosis, which is undulant fever in humans.
Okay.
And that's done, and then they're tattooed in the ear. The year that it's done is tattooed in the ear, so that the cow has a permanent record in their ear of the date of that. And that's about the only thing that we vaccinated cows for at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now they vaccinate them for BVD and IBR and, and leptospirosis.
Well, I know Dad started early vaccinating them for bangs before the vaccine was allowed.
Even approved,
Approved.
We vaccinated adults too. Vaccinated adults. I had records up here in my office years ago of all of the adult vaccinates that we did.
Adult cows.
Yeah.
Well, I thought
because
I'd
he had
stick
a storm of
in.
Abortion, and that was one way that they felt was that they could stop it was vaccinated.
So they jumped the gun.
Right. But it worked out. Eventually, we got things cleaned up, and
then it became legal.
Certified. Yeah, it was one of the early experimental herds. The state that they did that on. And then he used to be a tuberculosis-free herd. In fact, if you haven't let that plaque get away, there's a plaque down in that barn. A big brass plaque by the door that says Dogan Guernsey Herd certified and accredited for tuberculosis and brucellosis or something like that. You should get that and see that your dad preserves that and puts it away.
It may be up in the office, or it may be put away somewhere. Yeah. I'll ask about it.
Yeah, because that was a beautiful thing. And that's something that could be kept as an antique for years and years and years.
Okay, I'll look for that. Let's see, okay, you're protected from cow diseases, and then we'll have some things in about cow diseases later on. No wild animals threaten you. I'll put in that little dogs might come around and yap at your heels out in the barnyard.
That would make 11 months.
Okay, it's 12 months or 11 months, says Dick.
Well,
the ideal spacing.
That would be new. Probably an old, what you said was true then.
Well, I had once a year, and then my dad said, maybe 14 months.
Yeah, see, now since your dad has done that, people are really pushing this thing up. They want to get every bit of production out of these cows they can, and that's the reason they're wearing out, I suppose. It's because they're just pushing them too hard.
This is the ideal spacing, though no cow achieves this regularly. This keeps your milk flowing over the years, though you dry up for a short period before the birth of your calf. Amos comes and inseminates you artificially. You grow old in service. You may live in milk for as long as 10 or 12 years, perhaps even longer. It's shorter now, huh?
Yeah, shorter now, the average. In your herd, probably it was. But you know, when they figure that average, you look at the number of cans when they go out. And they go out a farm, they say, figure the age of the cows, and look how many calves are young that are around. There's a calf in a herd for pretty near every cow that's in there. And those calves are there until they're two and they're milking. So there's a lot of animals, a lot more animals on the lower end of the string than there is on the upper end, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the reason that that average. But I think 6 years is coming awful close to the average time that
Okay, well, I'll talk to Dad about that.
It's true that in your herd, your dad took care of the cows better, and they didn't have problems so quick, and I think maybe his average was higher.
Okay. At the end of a lengthy and noble life, when your milk is waning for the final time, and you have had 7 or 8 calves, you will be patted on the flank, put in a truck, and driven to the slaughterhouse. You will be killed painlessly. You will not make USDA prime. You are not bred to be a beef cow. You are too old. You are an old faithful dairy cow. You will end up as hamburger.
McDonald's.
Is that the story?
I think it's the hamburger now because that's all people are eating. And bulls that didn't used to be worth anything, you can send a bull to the market and get $1,000 for any kind of a bull because they make beautiful hamburgers. And dairy cows still make these kind of cuts of steak and stuff that you buy in some of these poor steakhouses, the cheaper ones like Pond Roast.
They use old dairy cows, huh?
Yeah, a lot of that stuff, they pick the better cuts out of these older cows and they use stuff to kind of tenderize them a little bit, and that sure isn't prime beef. The prime beef that we used to eat years ago, we don't find that in the restaurants that we eat in.
Mm-mm.
It used to be down there at the gun club, that boy brought lines and stuff like that, and he hung them down there in the basement and hung them until they were cured and everything, and you went down there and ate a piece of meat. You could cut it with your fork, but only the real good places serve meat like that. But the dairy cow, a lot of the time, a good big dairy cow that isn't skinny and all worn out will bring pretty near as much as a beef animal now because of the fact that they can make hamburger. Mm-hmm. There's a big market for hamburger. And look at the price of hamburger.
Yeah, well, Mother was questioning whether it would have even been hamburger and not dog food, but then I read something about McDonald's that said they bought old dairy cows.
Right. They buy the dairy cows and they'll take them down and put them in a lot in Texas or someplace where they've got some feedlot down there and feed them up a little bit and get just a little more fat on them. And use them for hamburger.
Well, that's interesting. Well, then.
So our style of eating has changed as well as.
That's true, and you know.
Whole wheat eater. I only eat whole wheat bread, not the cheap whole wheat bread, but the special real heavy, and then they slice it thin, and it's real heavy bread, and you eat 2 slices of that, and you're full.
Mm-hmm.
I eat bran for breakfast, post bran, because that's got bulk in it. And generally I do have a vitamin pill most every day. And I drink milk and I eat a lot of lettuce and meat. Most of the potatoes or the vegetables that I eat, I like on the raw side, even if they're cooked. I don't like them cooked until they're mushy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a wheat bread eater. I always have. I believe that was, even when we were young, my dad was always a butter man. Don't bring oil in the house, he said. I make a living on the farmers, and he said, butter is what we need to eat. We've always been a butter family. And Judy, this gal, is the same way. She's real particular about what they eat. And her husband was a pop and potato chip and junk food eater all the time. And she didn't like that. And orange juice, instead of pop, you can buy that canned orange juice in the store and mix it, and it's pretty near as cheap as the pop, and there's no reason why you should drink some carbonated junk.
It's all junk,
when you can drink orange juice, real true orange juice, it's better for you and is just about as cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I used to try and keep orange juice in the refrigerator all the time, and we had a pop machine out in front, and they drank the pop and threw the cans in the yard, and I had to pick them up. Once it was bottles, and they threw the bottles in the air. There was Canter down there, the Pepsi-Cola man, and so I got rid of the pop machine. That was too good a thing for the kids, but they don't know what's good to eat. Maria's real particular, and she serves good food for them. She grows sprouts, alfalfa, and sprouts wheat and stuff like that, and puts it in the salads and things like that. So she's my oldest daughter, kind of got on a food kit like that. And a lot of it is real good. I mean, well, just for an example, you can go to the grocery store and spend a pile of money. You know, I went in the other day and I was shopping with Judy and they said she's on a limited, she doesn't have a lot of money to spend. I said, now there's a package of cornmeal, look at the price of it. Well, it was 40 cents or 49 cents or something like that. It was a 2-3 pound package of cornmeal. I says, take that home and make cornbread. Well, she hasn't made cornbread in years. And I said, well, there's nothing to it. Well, she made a cornbread out of it. It was real good. I said, you put a little honey on that and a little butter and cut it when it's hot. And I said, that's real good. So the next time I was in the store, I bought her a muffin tin with six muffins. And I said, that's a little easier because then they're individual muffins. And now she's had that package of cornmeal in the house. And I know that she's had 4 or 5 cornmeal cakes. And I know she's had 4 or 5 trays of muffins out of that. Mm-hmm. And there's still cornmeal in that bag. And look how cheap that was. You go and buy a dozen donuts and they're 99 cents. And what do you get out of them? But a bunch of white dough and
sugar.
Yeah. And that cornmeal was good grain and it's filling and it's got fiber in it and it's good for you. And it's cheap.
Yeah.
We tried to get these people on relief to eat cornmeal. They had all kinds of cornmeal. They wanted people to eat cornmeal and some of these things that were in surplus. The dried milk, you know, that they dried some of this milk. They wanted these people to take that stuff and eat it. They were on relief, and they didn't want to have any part of that. That wasn't good enough for them. They had to have the best.
And the best is creamy.
Right. Well, because of the type of housing which we have now, with some of it is open housing, where they have a shed that the cows run in, and lots of times the cows are out where it's cold, and after they're milked and the teats are washed and they go outside where it's below zero, they can freeze their teats. And especially the younger cows that have got smaller teats and that produce a lot of milk, and especially when they're fresh, because the udder is tight and the circulation isn't too good in that area, and their teats are liable to freeze. When they do, the ends freeze and the teats freeze and the skin comes off, and sometimes that ends the cow's productive life. If they freeze bad, they just freeze and get black. And when we used to have all stall barns and they were all inside and they were only outside to drink water or outside to exercise while you clean the barn, this wasn't a problem. But again, it's a problem now with our new type of farming, our open housing and things like that. And as we were on that farm this morning, this guy had his freeze guard that he was putting on the teats. It's kind of a cream that seems to keep them from freezing or something.
That's fairly recent,
soft,
though, huh?
Yeah, that's fairly recent. But they tried to do all sorts of things. If you can keep them dry, why, they're less liable to freeze than they are when they're wet. And if you can dry them, if they're in the parlor long enough to get their teats dry before they go out, or if they go out into an area that isn't real cold, why, they're less liable to freeze, but it is a real problem.
Well, then we got... Now, tell me about dehorning. I didn't have any horns on this cow that we went through, and you talked about a dehorning frame or machine or something like that. That was the word you used.
Now, years ago, when...
Will a cow normally develop horns?
Yeah. If the cow has inheritance to have horns, she'll have horns. There is a breed of Holsteins that are what they call muleys, or hornless Holsteins. But they never could get good milk production hooked up with a hornless gene. In other words, the genes for no horns didn't hook up good with the genes for milk production. So they've had some problems that way. If you breed Angus and Holstein, the first cross is hornless because the Angus are polled. They're polled Herefords and they're polled other breeds.
What does polled mean?
Polled means hornless or muley.
Okay.
A muley or a polled animal is hornless. So then that means that most of your Holstein calves are born with horns. In early life, if somebody just takes a jackknife or a little instrument, they can cut that horn button off when they're 2-3 weeks old. They can remove it with caustic. They can clip the hair off that horn button and put a little ring of caustic on there, dehorning paste. And that removes the horn. And if somebody
stops it from ever growing.
Right. And if somebody, at one time they did that on your farm, but you never could get somebody that would continuously do the job, that was because of the health problem that your dad had. If somebody was really on the ball about it, that was all done, and the veterinarian didn't have to take the horns off, and they never had horns.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time we were called, and the animals were put in a squeeze chute and held still, and the horns were removed with the clippers or with a saw instantaneously. They didn't feel it. And then we pull the arteries out so that they don't bleed, and then they were powdered with a caustic powder, and then they were released from the chute.
It seems to me that I once, as a little kid, watched them sawing them off and felt that it was sort of an ugly process.
That is a little cruel, because every whip of the blade, that hurts, but with a clip, it's clipped like clipping your fingernails. It just clips off and it hurts, but the hurt isn't very long.
Mm-hmm. And mid-40s, you would have been clipping them?
Oh, yeah. I clipped him right up until he quit.
Maybe mid-30s when I watched it once.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought there was somebody on the outside giving it a pound. Okay, and Dad was saying something about sometimes a farmer might do it wrong and it'll bleed or something.
Right. If they clip them themselves, don't pull the arteries out, well, then they bleed, and some of them could bleed.
You sort of have to pull them and tie them.
Yeah, well, no, I don't tie them. I just pull them out completely, and they break off down inside so they can't bleed. See, that artery was just to the horn, so it doesn't need to be there anymore.
Oh, okay, that takes care of that.
Arterius cornelis.
That's the name of the artery.
Yeah.
Okay, artery to the horn.
Yeah, and then you just pull that artery out, and then it just doesn't bleed. It clots down inside there.
Okay, good.
This then seemed like a real inhumane way of doing it, but the people that know, if you were to take that animal and put it in the round barn there and fight it into a stanchion and put a halter on it and pull it up and inject it like you inject your tooth, and they'd fight the stanchion, they'd turn themselves upside down there and fall down and everything, and then you'd inject that horn so that it wouldn't hurt. Then you could saw it off and there'd be no pain there at all. But you'd probably inflict more pain and more... Yeah, Dennis is in there with it. Yeah. Then you'd probably inflict more pain on him and more harm to him than you would by putting him in the chute and crowding him for a moment and holding him still and clipping it off and pulling the arteries out and releasing him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our way of thinking. Of course, like I say, there's lots of other ways of doing it better. But the thing is that it's got to be done when the calf's at a certain age, and you've got to do that all along. You can't do it all at once. You got to do it as the calf's a certain age, and the farmers are, shall I say, neglectful to do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. That's the reason a lot of the herds people do that.
Okay, but if you put the stuff on it, why, they don't have to be. If you put the caustic on it or the...
Or you cut the little horn off of the jackknife when
the horn
it's
bud.
Young. Yeah.
Okay, let's see if we're getting that. Okay, then... I was poking through Hord's Dairyman the other night, and there was an article by a vet about not cleaning cows. It said that you're not supposed to do that anymore. You just sort of cut it off. Well, I wonder if you don't, then what happens?
I'm going to drive over there. This guy's backing it over there.
Okay.
He's a fruit peddler, and I let him use my gap.
And ducking like you've been doing. I said, it takes its effect. And he's a young man. And his insides are all burnt out. You drink beer day in and day out, 9 chances out of 10, honey, it's going to take its toll.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
I am in as good a shape as I was 30 years ago.
I believe that.
Because I've been taking care of myself.
I believe that. My old man's 66 years old, and he's got up at 11 o'clock at night, and these poor cockroaches down at General Motors that are sitting there sucking their thumb on their fancy retirement pension. Well, that bull crap's going to stop. This is going to stop. The union, in 5 to 10 years, you ain't going to see a union. You see what happened in Chicago with the machine? Well, this is what's going to happen to the Democrats. The Democrats are the first ones going to fall, and they're going to fall good. Because they've been giving this money away to the niggers and the goddamn whoopies and the doopies and the eighth wonder of the world. And you know what's going to happen? This bullshit's going to stop. It's got to stop somewhere. You cannot spend more than you make. I keep telling Pat, I said, the problem with you is, Pat, there's one thing the matter with you. You're a nice fella.
He's talking about my
boy. Talking about your boy, Pat.
I said, there's one thing the matter with you. I said, you don't understand the difference between your pocket and somebody else's. You've been sticking in your old man's pickle for all these years. I said, for God's sake. I said, think about it. If you have to go open up a garage and rent a building and heat it, it costs you $300 to $500 a month light nut. That's $125 a week you got to make before you even cut a grass dry expense.
I got a kid that I'm trying to prove that to, too.
Well, you know what you ought to do? You ought to give him the stiff eighth wonder of the world and show him where the door is.
Yeah. Well, I did,
you didn't work all your goddamn life to sit there and support your kids.
If they
want to stand up on their two feet, help them. If they're good. If they ain't no good, give them the pickle. That's all there is to it. And take them all their will, and that's all there is to it.
This is all recorded.
I don't care.
It's terrific. It's terrific stuff.
Right.
I'm glad to have it.
Now, this young lady is Ron Dogan's daughter from Beloit.
It's all right.
And he ran a dairy for a good many years, and she's writing a book about her experiences on the farm.
Well,
and
I'll tell you.
These things that you're talking about.
I'll tell you something. You want to see some experience? You get in my truck at 11 o'clock at night, you shake shotgun mama with the niggers and the spades and the whoopies and the dopers and the eighth
down
wonder
in Chicago.
Of the world. Down in Chicago and out, and you think you learned something on the farm. I'll show you how these goddamn Democrats have put this country in a mess like you ain't never seen. Jane Byrne has done the finest thing that she could ever done for the Democratic machine in Chicago. There will be a Republican as your next mayor of Chicago, because they're going to be fighting among themselves. The Jews don't even got a fight over in Arabia, for Christ's sake. They got the Arabs fighting among themselves. They don't even know what they're doing. You understand what I mean?
Sure.
They got them fighting among themselves. Shit, the Shah of Iran is fighting the goddamn Saudi Arabians. They're going over to Carter. And what happened? You know who's making all this money? Goddamn Billy Carter. Jesus Christ. You ain't seen nothing yet.
I can believe it.
I got $18 letters on my truck. I got 150 cases at $17 a case at $2,450. I got to make good next week. And some sucker gives me a bouncer for $1,000.
No, wait, what's a bouncer?
A bounce check.
Okay, a no good check.
I've seen more bouncers lately than I've ever seen in my life. And I go to the bank, oh, your credit's good, Mr. Levenstein. We'll take care of you. I said, yeah, I know you'll take care of me. Shit, you'll stick it in my ass as much as you can. I said, what the hell? I'm not working for the banks. Thanks, Bob. I think you're going to say something. I think this generation, you see what I've been saying for years, this generation don't know what it is to suck it up. And they're going to find out what it is to suck it up. Junior, he can make a living. His boy Art can make a living. But the ones that have been freeloading, they're going to find out what the eighth wonder of the world is. And whether Papa likes it or Mama likes it, or they're going to sit there and blame society. You can't blame society. You gotta blame the family.
Who are we talking about with Junior and Art? Anybody.
I don't give a shit whether it's him or whether it's my aunt or my uncle. It all stems from the home, and you gotta quit throwing the responsibility on society. These sons of bitching people today drink their Pabst beer at General Motors, take their pension plan, and stick it in your goddamn fanny. Well, that stuff's going to stop, too. And guys like us getting money at 18 and 20%, that stuff is going to stop, too. Because they took money away from people that could make money. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
They took money away from Doc Nyland, who could have made money on the deal, who could have rolled it off and depreciated it off. But you see, what happened was we got too many bankers that were fools. They took them on and they say, hello, Charlie, how are you? You get that son of a bitch $1 million real estate contract through for me, and we'll give you $50,000 on the side. It was too many grafts and too much bribery and too much payoff. Am I right?
Farm is old.
You know? Shit, you don't get rich in this world.
What is lettuce ahead now?
I see it'll be $1.
It's 99 cents down here in the store. Yeah.
And you don't get lettuce.
I heard an article just the other day that they got a new variety.
I got oranges on my truck, and you know what the box is for Hong Kong? The son of bitches oranges are better shipping over to the fucking Nipper Sink, Jap bastards, than they are for our own goddamn people. They ship better stuff over to the foreign country than they ship over here, because our goddamn people don't want to pay about it. And you know what you can ball this all onto? The Catholic Church. Support Union Lettuce, support Union Gray, and now when it's high, they're sitting there with their fingers stuck in their ass, and they ain't supporting nothing. This bullshit's going to stop with the color people. They've been sticking in our ass for the last 25 years. We gave them their goddamn...
You didn't watch Roots the other
day. Oh, yeah,
right?
I sure...
Did you watch it?
Oh, I sure did. It shows how them white Baptist bastards down in the South done it to us up in the north. I was down in Atlanta, Georgia, about 4 or 5 years ago. You know what the guy told me? He says, "Hey, you Yankees up north, you integrate with the bastards. You let them screw your women. We keep them in their goddamn place. We show them where the shit is. We don't give a shit they fuck around in Atlanta. We let them stay in Atlanta. But you come out in our districts and we got the Ku Klux Klan and the shotguns." Now, maybe they're wrong, and maybe they're right, but I tell you one thing, this stuff's got to stop. You got to quit being able to walk down the streets of Chicago where you don't fear for your life.
When I was a kid, it was beautiful. I went to Chicago, and I parked down in the underneath State Street in a Model A Roadster with no top on it, and I walked up and walked down State Street in the middle of the night, and I never had any fear for my life at all. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of places in Chicago I wouldn't want to drive at night.
That's right.
Even in a locked car.
Well, Dad was saying he had milkmen out at 3 o'clock in the morning. He says, you couldn't do that now.
Is this lady recording me?
This sure is, I am. Yeah. This is marvelous.
This is good. I like this. You put me on the goddamn radio.
No, she's writing the book.
No, I'm not on
the book.
I'll start hell for you. I went to see Patterson many years ago. Needed a tank. Wanted to help the man. Couldn't help him. Didn't have the tank. Didn't have the garage.
Now, who's Patterson?
Patterson's a oil company.
And okay. Now I say, today I got a chance. And I don't never forget who my friends are. You never forget who helped you. You know, and this is the problem with this generation. They don't give a shit for nobody. Years ago, if a Jew went out and he was an old-clad Jew, his name meant more than money. Today, these young bastards, they don't give a shit for nothing. They're downright spiteful. I get a kick out of some of these kids. They lie. They go up to their old man and say, "You dirty, rotten cockroach," and they get a kick out of it. And their parents, and they stomach it.